OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow.
We are turning our attention to the football, though. Daniel Harris is with us, host of the brand new podcast, United Rewind. It's going to be looking back on a classic Manchester United game every week. And the first episode is out next week, Daniel?
Yeah, that's right. 2nd of December.
What game are you looking back at?
The first one we're going to do the Norwich game at the end of the 92-93 season, which was kind of when it felt like United took one of the aspects of the particular kind of football that they played under Fergie to the world, which is that counter-attack when it looks like the other team are threatening and all of a sudden the ball's down the other end and in the back of the net. And people often talk about Alex Ferguson as someone who wasn't really a tactician, he wasn't really into coaching much. And it's true that his main qualities were probably spotting a player and motivation. But I think the thing about football that his teams really changed that, in a lot of ways, probably more significant than anything any of the other more celebrated sort of technical coaches than him managed to achieve, is that one thing that when your goalkeeper had the ball or when the opposition had a corner or when they're attacking you, they're actually potentially in quite a lot of trouble. And it's kind of like the speed at which they played. And there was one particular goal that they score where the ball just pinballs around the back four and the goalkeeper and then goes down the other end and is in the back of the net. And it's a bit, like doing a crossword on a roller coaster where you're kind of like, when you watch United over a period of years and they counter, you're trying to work out where the ball's going to go and where the passes are going to go. And sometimes it's quite difficult because there'll be three of them running and you're thinking, what they're going to pick. And they pick a pass even then that you haven't seen. And I think that was probably the main sort of technical development that Fergie gave to the world.
One of the things about Alex Ferguson that came into my mind this morning is the regeneration of multiple teams and creating multiple title-winning teams at Manchester United. This is the exact same challenge that Pep Guardiola now faces at Manchester City, and a lot of people have doubts of that, Daniel, whether or not Pep can do it. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, there's really not a lot of evidence to suggest that he can, in that he turned up at Barcelona and he had the greatest player ever, maybe, and the greatest midfield ever, probably. And to have those two aspects, what he then did was he moved Messi to centre forward and he instilled a style of play that got the absolute maximum from those players. And I guess that appears to be his genius, is getting elite level players and getting them to play even better than anyone thought they could, which was what he did at Bayern Munich. And similarly at City, the best players he had at City were not players that he bought, that mainly they were players that were already there. And even when he got there, he did everything he could to replace Aguero with Gabriel Jesus because he thought that the way that Gabriel Jesus plays is more akin to the way that he wanted to play. And it turned out that Aguero was just much too good to even think about leaving out. And he could play Guardiola's style. And also Guardiola's style probably needed to adapt a little bit because to take notice of the fact that he had Sergio Aguero available to him. So there's no evidence to suggest that he can regenerate a team or that he can even build a team. And the other thing is that you could have all the money in the world and you still might fail to adequately replace Vincent Kompany, David Silva and Sergio Aguero because it's impossible. Vincent Kompany is probably, I'm sure that people who are more august than me in this area will agree, the greatest captain in Manchester City's history. So to then go and find someone who can do what Vincent Kompany did, which is be a really good defender, it was, to my mind, not a brilliant defender, but a really good defender, and the symbol of the team and a symbol of the club, to go and find those two things in one, well, good luck with that. It looked like he'd replaced David Silva with Bernardo Silva, who was as good a player and a better athlete. But over the last couple of seasons, for whatever reason, Bernardo is not as good as he was then or not as good as we thought he was. So he needs to find something from him in order to have adequately replaced David Silva. And he needs to replace Sergio Aguero. And who on earth knows how you do that? In the meantime, he spent an absolute fortune on a load of substandard defenders. And we don't quite know how good Ruben Diaz is yet. And I guess maybe Nathan Ake will be good enough, but it looks at least suspicious that he will be. And Aymeric Laporte is also, he's a good player, but he's not a Vincent Kompany level player, never mind the Rio Ferdinand or Virgil van Dijk or Nemanja Vidic or Sol Campbell or John Terry level player. And those are the things you need to be good. And so that would be on the one side, on the one hand. On the other hand, Guardiola has already some really good players. He already has a good team. He already has the coaching brilliance to elevate players, and he has a lot of money. So those are a lot of the things that you would look for when you wanted to go and build a team. So it's difficult, and it's also difficult because what he's also got is he's already got Liverpool, who have a better manager and a better coach, and are there. They're right there already. So there's another team that are already succeeding that probably have another year in them left after this one of playing really well. So it's a difficult challenge, and I think he will make City better than they are now, but whether he will make them as good as the team that he had 2 years ago, that is doubtful, I think, but you can see both sides.
Does that involve Daniel taking players who are very good and making them better rather than actually maximising the potential of world-class players? Is this a challenge you can make of Pep Guardiola in recent times, that perhaps he hasn't truly improved the player? He might have changed them a little bit, but he hasn't got them to a level well above their supposed level.
The best teams, not always, but generally, the best teams have a mix. They have a mix of usually one or two homegrown players. And this is certainly the case of the best Fergie teams, but also Liverpool. They have a mix of homegrown players, really clever purchases, and some just, I'm going to go and get who I think the best player in the world is at this, and just really expensive buys. So you have to be able to do all of those things, and none of them are easy. I mean, there's a point at which just buying the best player for a position, especially in attack, is usually a pretty good way of making it work. But finding cheap-ish players who turn out to be way better than everyone thought they were, whether it's Dennis Irwin or Steve Bruce or Andy Robertson or Mohamed Salah, that is really hard. And City do also have some young players coming through. They have Liam Delap, who I've not seen very much of, but is meant to be excellent. But Guardiola has struggled to get those kind of players through at City. So he's got Foden, who looks to me will go on to be one of the best players of the generation. And that will make a very, very big difference once he starts regularly playing Foden and Foden starts hitting his level on a regular. But the rest of it is difficult. And in particular with Guardiola, I think it will always be the defence, because he's never really had a good one. He's had teams that defend well, because we count as defending well, pressing from the front, counter-pressing, and stopping the opposition from having the ball. But when it's come to it with his teams, with Bayern and City in Europe, eventually the defending's been found out. And didn't happen with Barcelona, because they were just too good at keeping the ball away and too good at having Lionel Messi. But he might get Messi at City. He may well get Messi at City, but it's not going to be the Messi that he had at Barcelona. And eventually, if we're talking about building a good team, then building one for the Premier League is one thing. But if we're talking about winning Champions Leagues, then he's going to need to build a good defence. And there's no particular evidence that that is something he can do, and quite a lot of evidence that it's something he can't do. It's complicated. It's difficult. And perhaps what he needs is maybe he needs a different coach. Who knows? So Alex Ferguson, when he got to the end of his career, and he was starting to realise that he only had one Champions League, and in order for his legacy, he needed to do something about that and win at least one more, he got a little bit more defensive. But in order to get that little bit more defensive and that little bit more cautious, he went and got Carlos Queiroz, who drilled the defending in a way that he wasn't able to do. And one of the things about Fergie that was great was he was a really good delegator. He wasn't sitting there, and I've probably said this before on here, he wasn't sitting there watching Monaco or watching Spartak Moscow and going, oh, that Vidic is a good defender. He was sitting there drinking his wine, watching the horse racing, and watching the History Channel, and we're reading the biography, doing the things that he does, and he got his scout to come to him and say, this guy's good, and then he'd watch and sign off. Whereas Wenger, for example, was doing all of the above himself. And you get the impression of Guardiola that he's also quite a control freak, and he's probably doing most of the stuff himself, and he's not an expert in every area. And so, I don't know, perhaps he needs to go and get himself someone to drill the defending. Perhaps he needs to get a defensive coach to try and address that thing that he's not particularly good at. I don't know. But I'd be surprised if he ever had a properly good defence. That's what I would say.
Daniel, just to move across Manchester and to United, obviously in Champions League action tonight on the revenge mission against Istanbul Başakşehir, finally getting that home Premier League win this season as well at the weekend. But just one enigma for United fans at the moment, a mystery within an enigma probably, is Anthony Martial. And watching him the other day, I mean, he had a couple of half chances. Confidence seems to be at a bit of a low ebb. When you think about Martial last season, he had, I think it was 23 goals. He scored in all competitions. This year, he just can't hit the back of the net. Hasn't scored in the Premier League. Granted, his three-game suspension probably didn't help. But when you see someone like Edinson Cavani come onto the pitch late on against West Brom and look so composed, so wise, his moves off the ball are something that Tony Martial could probably learn a lot from. What's your view on Martial at the moment? Is his position potentially even under threat if he keeps underperforming and Cavani comes on and starts scoring goals?
Well, if that happened, then for sure. I mean, I think the thing with Martial is he's much more suited to the way United play than Cavani, in that Martial holds the ball up. When he's not there, you really notice it, because he's the main outboard. If you get the ball forward, he's the most likely to hang on to it. Mason Greenwood's improved in that area. Marcus Rashford's also improved in that area, but Rashford's first touch isn't as adhesive as Martial's, and physically, neither of them are quite as good as he is. So he's important to the way United play, even without the goals. But the goals were obviously really important last season. And you said he had a couple of half chances on Saturday. He had a great chance on Saturday that would have made the whole game very much easier for United. But he's kind of feeding off scraps, really, in that there wasn't that much. One of the things about Martial that's good is he does also have the ability to create chances for himself. But he's not getting great service, and he didn't get much apart from that chance in the first half. And what was strange about the way United played at the weekend was, I wondered if, when United were under Van Gaal, this is another game we'll be doing on the pod, they played Leicester quite early on, and I think they played a diamond. And they had, up front, they had Falcao and Van Persie, and at the top of the diamond, they had Rooney, and also in the diamond, they had Di Maria. And they played some incredible football, went 3-1 up. Then they got done by a bad penalty decision, and I think a bad red card, and ended up losing 5-3. And Van Gaal completely lost his testicles after that. And the football that we watched thereafter was just absolutely dreadful, and just square passes. And beginning to wonder if United getting whacked at Spurs has spooked Solskjaer in kind of the same way, because it's fine to play Fred and McTominay because you don't trust the defenders to defend one-on-one when you're playing good teams. But against West Brom at home, there's just no need for Matic and Fred. You could have played Fred or Matic. I mean, I would generally not be playing Matic, so Fred. It was, I understand why he rested McTominay, because he played 120 minutes for Scotland, missed the second game, but then played 90 for Scotland, and he's someone whose game relies on physical power and running power, and he's someone United are going to need a lot. So I can understand why he rested McTominay, but if you're playing Fred should be enough at home to West Brom that you can play Van de Beek and Bruno Fernandes. And then you've got two creators, and you've got also some good legs in midfield. But he played Fred and Matic, and Matic doesn't run. He's not going to create much. His positive passing isn't particularly positive. And then if you stop Bruno Fernandes, then you more or less stop United. The entire responsibility for creation rests on Bruno Fernandes. And you watched it, and you saw United struggling to create. And I think that was the main problem, not the way that Anthony Martial played. Because if you'd have played another attacking midfield player or another winger, or both, I think you would have seen United create more. And then the other thing is that without Mason Greenwood, United still, he's not a right winger, but he can play off the right. Daniel James prefers to play on the left. United are basically playing without a right flank, because Aaron Wan-Bissaka has his attributes, and his attacking looked to be getting better towards the end of last season after lockdown, but it's not enough currently. And it's definitely not enough if he doesn't have a proper right winger outside him, or someone at least who can threaten to go outside with a bit of pace. And at the weekend, he had Juan Mata. And so I think in those games, if United perhaps thought about playing Brandon Williams, who offers more pace going forward, more thrust, then they would get more out of Anthony Martial, and they would look a much better, more balanced team than the absolute mess they looked against West Brom.
Can I just ask you about the international break? Because, Republic of Ireland fans will be delighted that there is no international football until March. Solskjaer has spoken about, you know, the importance of having this long stretch together as a team, that, you know, with players flying halfway across the world for international games, you know, the likes of Pogba, I guess, going back into the French camp when his confidence might be low at United, it can maybe sow discord in the heads of some players who are not having a great time with the club. Then they go off to their country, enjoy themselves, and come back in even worse moods than they were before to their clubs. So I guess over the next 3 or 4 months, having the United squad together, even compared to other clubs in the Premier League, do you think United can really benefit from that, make a charge up the table, given that the players are going to be, you know, stuck together for the next 3 or 4 months?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it seems ludicrous to say this, but if United win their game in hand, which is Burnley home, they're 4 points off the top. And it's a very strange league. And especially if United beat Southampton at the weekend and Arsenal beat Wolves, then it becomes extremely concertinaed. And you never quite know what you're going to get. You never quite know what you're going to get with Ole's extremely loose United team. But you don't really know what you're going to get this season, I think, apart from the fact that Liverpool are probably going to keep winning. Because what they have that, I'd say, most of the other teams don't have is they have the knowledge that they can win. And they just know what it needs to take to win, and they expect to win. And I think that makes a significant difference when you see them playing without important players. Whereas the other teams are sort of a bit more reliant on particular individuals to be there and do particular things, because that's the way their teams are set up. I think we will try and see. I mean, perhaps the next 2 or 3 months will more or less define whether Solskjaer is going to be a success at United, because if we're still seeing a lot of the games like we saw at the weekend in 2 or 3 months, and we're seeing that regularly, then it probably we would have to conclude it's not going to work. But we've also seen a couple of really great performances from United this season. Like their top level is a decent level. And if we can start to see that bit more often, then we will see a much better team. And Alex Telles has obviously only just come back from Corona. And what he does is he offers an attacking threat from fullback, which is something that United have really missed. Because if you're going to have two defensive midfield players, then you need the fullbacks to give you something going forward. I mean, it's quite handy to have anyway, especially also if your wide attackers are playing on the wrong side, so they're not going to keep the width particularly. So they'll definitely be hoping that Alex Telles will do something. And to go back to your point about Cavani, Alex Telles is definitely going to give you something a bit more with Cavani, because he's more inclined to attack the front post than Martial. And with Telles, the ball is going to be coming there with some quality. So that should hopefully improve things slightly. But I think the main thing that would improve United is slightly more adventurous team selections. That if you're going to play two holding midfield players in the big games, and that is understandable, but they definitely need to then find the solution for the right wing, because Mata definitely isn't it. And I think they need to try and find a way of getting Van de Beek into the team, because he offers the running power that they didn't have at the weekend, the desire to run beyond the strikers and goal threat. And United, just having scored really freely towards the end of last season, they're struggling to score this season.
Just very briefly before we wrap, Daniel, why have things gone so right for Jose Mourinho so far this season at Tottenham, and how sustainable is it?
I think there are two main reasons why it's worked for Jose Mourinho, and they're Harry Kane and Heung-min Son. Like, he's got two brilliant strikers who are absolute tops of their games and the tops of their forms. And if you've got that, then you got a chance in any game. And I think the reinvention of Harry Kane has made a huge difference, because he's Spurs wonders if they lacked a midfield playmaker, but at the moment he is it, and he's also scoring goals. So at that point, that's Mourinho, because what Mourinho can do is then he can organise a low block. If there's one thing he can do, it is that. And the counter-attacking, he's famous for not really drilling much in the way of attacking movements and relying on high-quality players to get on with it and produce these moments that you can't coordinate. And because you can't coordinate them, then you definitely can't defend against them. If they don't know what they're going to do, then the opposition definitely don't know what they're going to do. And that's what he's got currently. He's got a rear guard that is working, and he's got a team that are absolutely devastating on the counter or when you give them space. And that is enough. And so I would say feels a lot like Kane and Son have sort of rejuvenated Jose Mourinho. And people used to say that Jose Mourinho's football was outdated, and I always felt like that was rubbish. That his Chelsea team, if you put his first Chelsea team in the current Premier League, there would be very near the top, probably at the top. And it's not that the football's out of date with Mourinho, it's that the way that he was trying to impose his particular style of football on players and personalities who were not suited to it was the problem with Mourinho. What you've got now is you've got a defence that lacks pace in the middle particularly, so low block, which is very suited to Mourinho, but they're good defenders. And you've got quick attackers who are mentally strong and who take chances when you offer them. And that is also the height of Mourinho. So I don't see any reason that as long as Son and Kane are fit, that Spurs can't challenge. I mean, if one or both of them get tired or get injured, then they're going to run into some problems. But it was funny because it looked for a while like Spurs were basically getting the whole Mourinho experience on warp. And then they gave him some money. They gave him a decent amount of money this summer. He bought well. And so we should also note that it's not just Kane and Son. It's that the signing of Højbjerg worked really well. The signing of Reguilón's worked really well. And so they gave him money. He spent it well, which at United he didn't do. And he's just got maybe the two best players in the league at the moment playing up front for him. And all those things, along with the strangeness of the season. Because also, it's kind of quite a low-energy way that Spurs play. And in a season where the games are coming midweek weekend, there aren't. I think for the teams that are left in the League Cup, I think Spurs are out of the League Cup, but there's a game every midweek between now and Christmas. So for those teams that are playing a lot of football, if you play a relatively low energy, low pressing style, I think that's also going to help Tottenham.
Yeah, for sure. Daniel Harris, great stuff. Best of luck with the podcast.
Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m.